Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACYuma.com studios. 560 KBLU.
Do you hear this? Every parent needs a break, right? Hi, I'm Wes McDowell with the Wes McDowell Insurance Agency. If rising insurance rates are keeping you from having date nights, then call our office at 928-305-1607 for a free and hassle-free quote. That's 305-1607. Let us see if we can save you money so you can have a night away from all of those loud kids. Good luck with that.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, host with Deason, Garner, and Hanson. I've got in studio here Adam Hanson, my partner-in-law, and Chase Thompson. He is our special guest today. Welcome, Chase.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So what we've been doing recently is we've been doing a lot of conversations. We have business owners in town come in and describe what they went through to achieve the level of success that they have, and more particularly, the things that the nuances that individuals looking from the outside in might not understand, the struggles that you went through and to overcome and get to where you are, because I think many people who may be working at your office or just even patients of yours think, well, this guy probably was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. His parents laid out the red carpet as to how to go through school, and he took those steps, and now he's where he's at. And most of the time, that's not the case. And so I want to hear what your story is.
Okay, well, wasn't born with a silver spoon, but my parents were well enough off that I could go to college. And so I went to the U of A and was on scholarship there.
So did they pay for your college?
I was on a scholarship.
Okay. So they would have if you didn't get a scholarship?
That's a good question. Good question for my dad. But I would imagine they would have helped.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that was, I know scholarships were a big thing. So I was able to go on scholarship to the U of A. And then after undergrad, I went to dental school, and they weren't going to pay for dental school. That dental school is ridiculously expensive, very, very, very expensive. And so when I got that tuition bill for the first time, I decided I'm going to join the Navy, and I had a Navy scholarship. Basically was in debt to the Navy with time instead of in debt to Uncle Sam for hundreds of thousands of dollars. And yeah, I think the average debt of my classmates, and this was back 12 years ago, I think, 12 years ago that I graduated, average debt was about $385,000 at about 7 or 8% interest. And so that was...
That was undergrad?
No, that was dental school.
Oh, you're talking dental school. I zoned out for a minute, sorry. You skipped back baccalaureate.
That's okay. I'm boring. I'm a dentist. You guys had to spice up your...
Did you know we had your brother on last week?
Oh, yeah? All right.
He didn't even tell you?
No, he did tell me. He said it was a lot of fun.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah,
good.
He said it was fun.
He lied, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So going to dental school, did you ever have any doubt in your mind that you would actually get into dental school?
Oh, I stress out. That's what I do best. I stress and create doubt where there is no room for doubt. So that's what I do really well. Yeah, it's one of the reasons I went into dental school, I think, is because I wanted stability. I'm a worst case scenario planner, and I like to have things under control. And you know, you can use whatever word you want: persistent, tenacious, determined, dedicated,
OCD,
type
well,
A.
I was gonna say, so after years of professional counseling, now I can tell you I've got a different term for it. It's generalized anxiety with OCD tendencies.
Okay,
so that's part of the reason I became a dentist. Yeah, just because that is just ingrained in me. That's part of who I am.
So when people look at you and the lifestyle that you have today, that you're a business owner, you are an endodontist, you do root canals all the time, and I think the general consensus is endodontists make a lot of money and they have it made, so they don't understand the struggle of the everyday person. What would you say to that?
I mean, that's, there's endodontists do well. I'd say I'm successful. I do well financially. I've worked hard to get there, but that's not without struggle.
So what did you do that people don't understand that it takes to get to where you're at?
What's the recipe? The recipe for success, Chase, tell us.
Well, step one is about 10 years of higher education. And that's, like I said, that comes with cost. For me, it was time. I dedicated 4 years to dental school, was 4 years in the Navy, working off that dental school debt, essentially, which was a great experience. But then after that, I went on to more training and did a two-year residency for endodontics. And so there's a lot of prep that goes into it just before you're even licensed, before you're able to do what you want to do. And so by the time you reach that point, people assume that, oh, you're a dentist. You must have received a big fat check along with your diploma.
Right.
No, that didn't happen to me anyway.
Okay. You went to NYU, didn't you?
I had classes at NYU. I was actually at the VA across the street, the VA in New York Harbor.
And did so you live in Manhattan?
No, I worked in Manhattan. That's where the school was. That's where the hospital was. But I was actually outside of Manhattan, so I commuted in. I had three kids in residency, so we didn't want to live in Manhattan.
So what compelled you to go all the way over there? Yuma to Manhattan.
It was different, that's for sure. So we wanted to try something different.
For somebody that's scared and worst case scenario and has, you know, this anxiety, OCD, whatever it is, it seems like Manhattan would just be your worst nightmare.
Loud, dirty.
Well, see, I go through different phases. So like right now you caught me at a good midlife crisis.
Okay.
So I go through phases where I'm like, I'm going to just do something crazy. And so that was, I'm going to New York.
Your wife, Megan, I mean, what does she say? She's like, okay, I'm in. I'm going to Manhattan.
Well, so her sister lived there. And that was.
That's right.
So that wasn't such a big draw away from family. It was actually a draw to family. Mm-hmm. So which is another reason why we lived outside the city. We lived closer to her family, and the kids had cousins to play with, and so it was a lot of fun.
So you weren't completely alone?
No.
Oftentimes we get the question from our clients, what can we do, what language can we put into the trust to help our kids be responsible with the inheritance that we're going to leave them? And I think, well, if you haven't done that already, you're about 18 or 30 years too late, because it takes the discipline going through high school, college, graduate school, and then after that even an additional professional training to get to where you're at. Now, the money that you earn, I think you have a special understanding of how difficult it was to get, and so you appreciate it a bit more, whereas somebody else would make the same level of income but didn't have to go through that schooling might just blow it on fancy cars and vacations. And so I guess the question is, where does it start gaining that discipline, and what advice would you have to individuals that are raising children to help them acquire that level of discipline and character to make it and succeed in life?
Well, that's a tough question. I've got the same question for my kids. I want to instill hard work. I want to instill values to help people to be productive members of society. And it's a tough question. There's generational wealth that I don't have that. But there's generational wealth that they've done studies on, and I think it's after three generations, it's usually gone. And it's because of what you talked about. The first generation develops it, earns it, has a different mentality towards that wealth than the second and third generation. And so it's a question that I don't know how to answer.
So it seems something that we've been talking to our clients a lot about is that the real value isn't actually the money inheritance portion that you're giving them. It's the legacy that you've left for them of your example, of the work ethic that they've developed because of your parenting skills, and being able to contribute to society as individuals. Then that little boost that you give them with the inheritance, that's the icing on the cake. None of them deserve it just because they were born into your family. You can give it to them, and certainly will help you do it and keep the government out as much as possible out of the process of passing that inheritance on. But the biggest legacy is what they've developed as individuals and able to contribute and make their own wealth.
Exactly. I mean, money's a tool, and it'll help you to be worse than you are. It'll help you to be better than you are. And it'll just magnify whatever skills or whatever negative traits you have. And so I don't think it's a necessarily a universal problem solver. That's not the case.
Can money buy happiness, Chase?
So I would tell you, my wife and I have had this discussion several times. We make more money now than we did when we were going through residency. We make more money now than when we were first married, living in a 600 square foot, one bedroom apartment. We're not any happier now than we were then. I have a boat now, but I don't think we're any happier. And so I would say, once you have your necessities met, I don't think money makes you happier.
Necessities like food, shelter, what else?
Food, shelter, clothing, the basic necessities. Once you have those met, I don't think that money will make you, if you can't be happy having all your necessities met, if you can't find happiness there, an extra zero at the end of that is not going to make you happier.
You spent a couple of years abroad, didn't you?
I did.
For your church?
Yep.
Yeah, so where did you go?
So I went to Brazil.
Yeah.
And that's actually part of why I became a dentist is, again, I'm a planner, worst case scenario guy. I can still remember a friend that I had down in Brazil. He was supporting his family and they struggled. And he had been weeks without work. And I can still remember clear as day the look on his face. And it was a look of fear. He was present, but you could tell his stare was out 1,000 yards. And he just didn't know how he was going to feed his family that night. And I saw that look. And that, to me, I told myself, I don't want to ever feel what he's going through. Because I could tell it was shattering him. And I wanted to be autonomous. I didn't want someone else determining if I was going to be able to feed my family that night. And these are the thoughts that I had that I understand them differently now, but these are the thoughts that I had that led me to be in a profession that lends itself to being an owner operator. But it would be that thought of, I don't want someone else determining whether or not I have work to make money to feed my family. So I saw that fear and it scared me to death, as this friend of mine was scared to death.
And I think society in general, we have that fear, but we take different approaches as to how to resolve that. And one is work hard and try to provide for your family, obtain a skill set that is going to be valuable to other people that they're going to pay you for, either those services or the products that you produce. And that's the capitalism approach. And the other is everybody contributes to the pot, and then we distribute the resources proportionately to the society, or at least contributes a portion of what you make. And so there's a safety net, so nobody has to go without food, clothing, or housing. Which of those do you ascribe to?
Well, I think that's what's great about our system is I think you need a little bit of both. There are times when you need to give and be very charitable and just give a helping hand. And there are times when you need to be the one saying, you can solve this on your own. You can figure it out. And that struggle is going to be good.
Now, the interesting thing, though, about with government programs is it doesn't take charity into the equation. Because when a government program delivers out goods and services, it's not making those goods and services. Okay, it's taking them from other people, or it's taking the resources, the money from other people, the taxpayers, to then provide the goods and services to the other individuals who they determine, the government determines, deserve them. And so there is no charity involved there, because if the government taxes you, you aren't feeling charitable in paying your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference between charity and then a social safety net. So where it sounds like you ascribe to charity and the voluntary giving of your goods and services, But how do you feel about the government creating a system that makes a safety net for society?
I think a safety net needs to exist. The degree to which it exists is where you need both sides to debate that. There are times when people just need a helping hand, and you can't expect anything in return. The government's very generous with other people's money, with other people's resources. And as a business owner, I understand that very much. And it's a tough question, because I think there's got to be room for both. You have to have a safety net to help people who fall on hard times, but you also have to have an incentive that gets them back on their feet and then allows them to contribute to that safety net to help the next guy. And so finding that balance is the tough thing.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Are your affairs in order, or do you think your affairs are in order? I'm attorney Adam Hansen. Now is the time to stop procrastinating. In fact, we have a seminar coming up on December 6th at 2:30 in the afternoon at the Foothills Library. My partner, Sean Garner, and I will be sharing with you what you need to know to get your affairs in order, or what you need to know to update that planning. Time is of the essence. Stop procrastinating. We'll see you at the Foothills Library.
At Firearms Unknown, there's huge deals this Black Friday through Cyber Monday. Select guns and accessories as much as 70% off. Semi-automatic handguns for as low as $99.99. That's right, under $100 for a 9mm or 380 handgun. Supplies are limited and deals are only good while supplies last. Firearms Unknown, 801 West 32nd Street, or visit online at firearmsunknown.com.
Listen to KBLU from 8 to 9 every Monday morning to Life, Death, and the Law. Sean Garner and Adam Hansen discuss estate planning options. Learn how you can plan your estate using a will or trust to protect your family and secure your legacy. That's Life, Death, and the Law every Monday, 8 to 9 a.m. on 560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
So we were talking about the social safety net that you feel is necessary for a thriving society. You don't want to see a family out on the street without clothes and shelter. And the question is it better in the hands of individuals with charitable intent that they get to decide what portion of their hard-earned money they contribute to these individuals, or do they turn that power and decision-making authority over to the government to decide how much to take from those who make the income and provide it to those who need it, and how much those who need it actually receive? So that, I guess, is the balancing act. What's the equation there, and is it better left in the hands of private organizations, churches, charities, individuals, or in the hands of the government?
Oh, I think without a doubt, the closer you can bring that to the individual who's giving and the individual who's receiving, the better. The farther apart you have those two, the less connection there is, and you lose all of the emotional value that's involved with that, and all of the, on both sides, the giving and the receiving.
Right. So you and I both pay taxes, and we also contribute to charity. When you contribute to charity, I've contributed to my church, and I feel good about it. But I've also contributed charity to individual families. For example, one time we had a car, and it was my daughter's first car. It was nothing to write home about, $2,000 car, and we could afford an upgrade for her. She had driven it for the first couple of years, kind of got some driving under her belt. There were some nicks and dings in the car as a result. But then there was this family that was really in need of transportation. So we took the car. I didn't ask my daughter. This was the bad dad part of it. But I took the car, and I asked the individual, would you like to buy this car? I'll finance it. Tell me how much you can afford. We worked out a deal where they said, yeah, I can afford whatever it was, $100 a month, something like that. And so we put it all together as a contract, and the individual was feeling very grateful that we would come in as a financier and provide the car. So we delivered the car, and when the transaction was done, and because I saw they were willing to take the responsibility and the accountability for paying off that debt, then I could exercise real charity, which is write off the debt, hand over the title, the car was theirs, and it was done. That felt amazing. They cried. I didn't, but because I'm not a crier, but I may have. If I was a crier, that felt good. And I think that resonates with what you're saying, the closer you are to the individual. I never feel good paying taxes, and I don't see a lot of people crying for joy and out of gratitude when they are spending their food stamps. And so how do we solve that? The distance between the charitable, and it's not, like I say, when it's coming from the government, it's not charity. We're not giving it voluntarily, and the individuals that are receiving it are not grateful.
Well, why did you do that?
I did it because I saw the need, and I had the ability and the means. And so I think most individuals do feel that. They want to help others out. But when it's compelled, then the charitable feeling goes away, and I think that you actually become more greedy to hold on to your stuff because you're tired of people taking it from you involuntarily.
I don't know if I agree with most people would do what you did. Do you agree with that, Chase?
Have you ever been in a position where you helped a family out?
You mean you don't? I don't know what you mean, Adam.
So Sean says, "Well, I had this car. He didn't need to get rid of it, but he saw this person in need. Okay, we're just going to give him our car." Mike, I don't know if a lot of people would do that, and I think that's the premise. He said a lot of. Most people are like that. They're charitable at heart. I don't know if they are.
Oh, I think they are. I think people are very charitable within their circles.
I think my opinion is they probably might be if it doesn't hurt, if that makes sense. I'm charitable when it's not a sacrifice for me, you know?
Then is it charity?
Is it really charity, right? That's why I'm going back to, I would argue, 85%, 90% of Americans are probably living paycheck to paycheck. And so being charitable is very difficult for the average American. I'm just playing devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. So how do you create a system like we're talking about where most of us are not going to be charitable because we can't afford to be, or our mindset is such that we don't think that we can be charitable, so I'm not going to be charitable. Now how do we help the poor among us without exerting some sort of tax?
So we've gone through this program called...
What is that? Self-reliance?
Self-reliance. And with self-reliance, it talks about the order of priority that you need to use your resources. And number one is to give back to God. And then number two is to put a little bit to savings. So then once you've have a rainy day fund and you pay all your necessary needs, then you put a little bit towards savings, and then that seems to be the rule of thumb. Those are the things that you contribute to first, and you contribute to savings for college and other things after that. But what happens is that law generates not only individuals that see the value of money, but produce a lot of wealth, and they start to see that, okay, I can actually meet my needs if I plan ahead and the money's coming in and have a little bit of excess, or the requirements that I have for my food weren't as much as I anticipated, and so we can share a portion of this. And I think that is a really good basic understanding, is everybody learns self-reliance. And then, yes, look out and see the people around you, and you can choose to sacrifice a little bit of what you have set aside to share with other individuals. But when you simply rely on, I'm going to keep everything that I make, unless the government's going to take it away from me, and I'm going to feel entitled to a house and food and a car because I live in the society. And I don't have to prepare for that rainy day. I don't have to give back to God. I don't have to, you know, be responsible for my own choices. If I like this TV, I'm going to buy it. then I think that the ability, or at least the mindset of having charitable intent, goes out the window, because all you're thinking about is what I'm entitled to, and I'm going to spend everything I have now and be entitled to the necessities if I run out. That's where I think the problem comes from. I think more people would be charitable if they were able to maintain total control over the own resources that they generated.
Yeah, I agree. I think people in general are happy to help wherever they can, even if it hurts them.
And it doesn't have to be money.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It could be inviting someone over for dinner. It can be, you know, spending some time with someone who just needs a friend.
Yeah.
And that's a commitment. That's a sacrifice.
Or going to help repair their car.
Yeah.
Or mow their lawn or repair their roof.
And I think we live in a society where that happens all the time. And that's great. And I think you're right that people tend to be turned off by the fact that Big Brother comes in and reaches into your pocket and says, we're going to take this percentage because we know better how to use it. There's some people that need some help. There's some things we need to run. There's some programs we need to set up. We're going to use your money to do that.
Right.
I don't feel any connection to that.
And even if they took dollar for dollar and were actually using those dollars for things that were necessary in society, and there wasn't a lot of waste in the bureaucracy in between, it still seems imperfect because you don't have that connection. You don't have the gratitude on either end for the charitable gift or for the receipt of the gift. But we all know that it's something like only 10 cents on the dollar, if that, that the government takes, gets to the person in need. And then when that person in need receives it, I don't know that there's a lot of gratitude in their heart for receiving it. And especially if you're working your tail off and you're going to the store and you're cutting coupons and you're buying, you know, the cheap ground beef, and somebody in front of you is buying, you know, the prime cut steak, and they're using food stamps, essentially your tax dollars, to pay for that, that kills that charitable spirit even more. I think that is what dampens it. And so not only is this governmental social safety net not efficient, but it actually works to dampen what we would be doing on a private level had we been given the opportunity.
Yeah, I think what you hit on there is really, it's the comparison that makes people feel those negative feelings on both sides. There's pride coming from the top looking down and from the bottom looking up, thinking, well, if you are deserving of that, then so am I. Or if I'm deserving of that, then you are not. Then that comparison is ugly. I mean, we have church leaders who have told us that, and that's the word that President Benson used. It's ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comparison...
What did I compare?
Well, you said you feel these negative feelings when you see someone, when you're buying ground beef, mm-hmm. and then someone using food stamps to buy prime steak.
Well, and here's the thing. I got no problem with somebody buying prime steak if they worked hard and they decided that that's how they want to allocate their resources. But when they're allocating my resources to buy the prime steak, so it's not necessarily just comparing the quality of food that we're eating. It's the fact that they're doing it without putting in the work and the effort, and at least I don't see the work and the effort from my side, and then making that decision based on limited resources that they have.
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between my car is not as fast as your car, not as shiny as your car, my
sure.
house isn't as big as your house, and then now I'm feeling envious of you, and that's different if we're both working and, you know, trying to do our best and deciding how to use our resources or what level of debt we want to get in. But if I'm saying, listen, I only feel like working 20 hours a week, and I know that you work really hard to run your business. You work 40 hours a week doing the job, and then you work 20 hours a week on the business end of it, so you're going to do 60 hours a week. But, you know, we're both entitled to the same house, and so you don't get a bigger house. I get the same size of house as you just because we're all entitled to the same shelter. That, I think, is not just comparison. That is, it's entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
And entitlement is different than just being envious of something else that somebody's got.
I hear you to say, so it's you're being taken advantage of, really. When the person's buying steak with food stamps, and then you're you're buying ground meat because that's really, you worked hard, but that's, you can't, you're making too much where you're not on food stamps, but you're making enough where you can afford ground beef, but not the steak. And this person comes in, uses food stamp. I hear you say, well, that's, I'm being taken advantage of. You're taking my money and giving it. So I think it's a different mindset than being, but like you're comparing, like envious. You're not being envious. You're just being, you're saying I'm being taken advantage of.
Well, and it goes back to, you know, speech that Abraham Lincoln used to give a lot of times. And it says that, you know, the person should not eat the bread of the laborer if he's not laboring himself. And he used it in putting down slavery and saying this is not right. The slave is laboring and creating the wheat and the ingredients for the bread, and the master is eating that, and that is not right. It's just fundamentally wrong for one man to benefit from the labors of another man. Everybody needs to labor and work for the bread that they eat. And that same sentiment follows through to me today. If your labor becomes something that is more valued in society, so you can make more for each hour that you work, and then I could be envious for the fact that we're working the same amount of hours, but you're getting paid more. But really, I get to decide what I contribute my time to. And it's based on whether I've committed hours beforehand, went to the school, or whatever I want to do that type of job. But either way, I get to decide based on the limited amount of resources that I have, what I buy with those resources. The hard thing is when I look across the street and say, that person is not contributing to the labor force, but they're still entitled to the same amount of services and products, that is when I become disenchanted with the system.
Do you think that happened in this last election?
Explain. What do you, tell me more. What do you mean?
I feel like this last election was kind of like a referendum of the people. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but it felt like that to me, that we were just kind of done with the government telling us what to do and how to do it and taking our money and putting it where we don't want it to be put. We don't have a say in that. I felt like that's what we saw in this last election, was kind of like a stick-it-to-the-man mentality. What do you think?
I think there was certainly some of that. I think they're going to be
analyzing. Did you feel that? I mean, did you feel that way? You can be honest.
Yeah,
nobody listens
I mean,
to this.
No, I'm happy with the outcome of the election. I think that there were opposing ideas, and neither one of them I fall exactly in line with, but I think a lot of people felt that way. And a lot of people were just like, I'm done with, I think it was referendum on the media is what it was. And I just think you look at each
How
side.
How so? What was wrong with the media?
Well, the media has always been biased to the left.
A propaganda machine, right?
Okay.
Exactly.
It can be either way. It can be for anything.
Yeah.
It's always been that way.
Whether they intend to or not. I think some people do intend to, and I think some people are just, they do that because our natural biases always come out and always manifest.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think it was a referendum on that, on being spoon-fed only bits and portions of information that they cherry-pick and expose us to. But now we have media options besides mainstream media that are opening people's eyes to, well, I hear what you're saying, but I hear what he's saying also and what she's saying, and I think I'm going to go along this line. So I hope that this election was a referendum on the media, and the media, I think people in general are going to be now hopefully more open to listening to other ideas, but it does have the risk of just going down each person into their own echo chamber and hearing,
yeah,
seeking out and listening only to what they want to hear.
So if you were king for the day, you said that you didn't agree necessarily with one side or the other, that they each had their redeeming values. What issues would you say, okay, I'm going to tackle this issue. If I'm king for the day, this is my way that I'm going to make a more equitable society.
Well, you didn't tell me this was going to be an election podcast, but I thought we were over with that.
There is no election. I'm just
saying. So I'll tell you what the choice boiled down to me as I saw it.
No, not what the election. I'm saying you get to decide now.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who's in charge. You get to decide what the policies are, whether it's taxes, whether it's foreign policy, whether it's human rights. What issues do you tackle?
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
95.1 KTTI, 100.9 The River,
and 560 K-Blue
wish you and yours the very best this holiday season. And so does this great local business. Chevron, with 20 locations in Yuma. Top off with Techron at your neighborhood Chevron.
Are you looking for more in this world? Are you ready for something bigger? Then we are looking for you. The big-hearted, the bold, the messy and the gutsy. The teachers, the growers, the builders, the skilled, the sharers, the change makers. We need you. We are the Peace Corps. In more than 60 countries, we go all in and all out. We are volunteers, partners, communities, working together, living together, bringing our experience, passion, and joy to building a better world together. From tackling climate change in Mexico to keeping kids healthy in Kenya, from sustainable farming in the Philippines to education in Kosovo. We learn more, give more, share freely, and serve boldly. Are you ready to tackle the tough stuff? To go the distance to make a difference? Then we have a place where you belong. Join us at PeaceCorps.gov.
Vitalant is Arizona's largest nonprofit community provider responsible for fulfilling blood needs for 62 Arizona hospitals. We are the designated provider for every hospital throughout Yuma County.
Vitalant needs more than 600 blood donors every day in the state of Arizona. About one in every 5 to 7 hospital patients requires a blood transfusion, so that takes a lot of blood donors.
With a daily need of 600 blood donors, all blood types are needed, but always most greatest in demand is type O blood, which is the universal blood type required in emergencies and traumas. Giving blood is safe, easy, and painless. It takes only about an hour to go through the process start to finish, but the actual donation is less than 10 minutes.
Every blood donor in the month of December will get a free medium cheese pizza from Pizza Hut. In order to make an appointment, visit our website, vitalant.org, and enter the word Yuma. You can then find a blood drive near you and sign up.
Wildlife around the globe needs help. And when you help protect them, you become a friend of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. A real friend. The kind of friend you want to thank. And not just with a card or a text, but with a song.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend.
From your friends at the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, thank you for helping protect wildlife around the globe. Without you, there's no them. Learn more at sdzwa.org/friend.
Thank you for being.
City News Yuma Minute, I'm Dave Nash. The Ocean to Ocean Bridge sign is about to get a facelift. The Yuma City Council selected a contractor to upgrade the pan channel lettering to LED lighting, which could save future costs on energy and maintenance. The look will be a little different, with each letter covered by a translucent sign face. The effect will be to make it appear that each letter is lit rather than each letter appearing as a series of individual bulbs. The current bulb type is outdated, creating issues when they burn out. The project also includes repair and repainting of the current sign, plus addition of a battery backup. Replacing the bridge sign is funded mostly by a block grant, with the city providing some matching funds. The sign commemorates the last link in the first automobile highway in the United States that linked the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean. Construction could start as soon as January.
The City News Yuma Minute, brought to you by YumaAdvertising.com. To grow your business, log on to YumaAdvertising.com.
Go with your gut. Your dog's immune system is based in the gut. A diet lacking in nutrients can cause itching, scratching, and a weak immune system. However, there is a solution. DINOVITE. DINOVITE.
It took a grand total of 2 weeks. The dog stopped itching, the hair stopped falling out.
Try DINOVITE for free. Just pay shipping and handling. Learn more at dinovite.com/radio.
Happier, healthier with every bite. Over a million pets helped with DINOVITE.
If you're the owner and or operator of a local business and want to continue to hear the right talk, please consider advertising on KBLU. Your advertising dollars are the gasoline for the Clark, Kilmeade, Bongino, Hannity, Beck engine. Without your support, the old 560 just won't roll. Reach out to like-minded folks, the patriots listening to this legendary radio station. When you do, you can invite new customers in and remind regulars to visit more often. And most importantly, keep the programming you love on 560 KBLU.
What is the latest and greatest, or even not so great? Hi, I'm Rich DeMuro with Rich on Tech.
Rich on Tech, Saturday at 5 p.m. on 560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
For a day, Chase, you're king for a day. How are you going to fix, how do you bring world peace?
What's the best, most important thing?
Fix it.
I haven't thought about that. I don't know what I would do at a nationwide level. But what I have thought about.
What do you do with your time? You don't think of these things? Sean, what would you do? Number one, right off the top of your head.
I think about Rome all the time. So what I would do is
Keep it short. Just give them an example.
I would make an amendment that you can't incorporate a state without it being the same procedure of a constitutional amendment. You can't just go through Congress and have it signed by the president. That would be one thing that I would...
See? Right off the top of his head.
Address.
Well,
you don't have that?
No. It may surprise you. I'm not an attorney, so I haven't thought... Root canals for everyone. So getting back to what I looked at in the election, and this will answer your question, so bear with me, but I would say I can only be king in my own house. And so who of these candidates is going to allow me the freedom and the choice to make an impact with my resources? And it was clear to me who was going to dictate choices for me and who was going to allow me freedom.
Interesting.
And allow me agency to make that impact.
Very deep. I like it.
And so that is...
So how do you create freedom?
Get out of the way.
So minimize government.
Yes.
So you got it.
Now, there's push and pull to that. You have to have both sides, which is why it's a shame if both sides aren't talking
or just
pointing fingers and name
what
calling.
What sector of the government do you minimize first? IRS, FBI?
Well, that's one sector. That's one. That's executive branch.
Well, IRS would be a great one. I'd love to do that. I write big checks to them all the time, and yeah. Anyway.
So you would have taxes be lower for everybody? Or what would you do with the IRS? Eliminate it?
No, I don't know that I'd eliminate it, because, again, you need it.
How about a flat tax? What do you think of a flat tax?
I think I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
But a flat tax is what I'll tell you what I don't like, and I don't know if a flat tax addresses this fully. I think at a certain level, you shouldn't be taxed. Until a certain level, you shouldn't be taxed because you're one of the receivers, right?
Okay.
And the idea is we want everyone to be at a point where we're the givers.
So $10,000 of income, no tax.
I don't know about the number.
For example.
Yeah, I don't know about the number. But for example, yeah, if you make less than $10,000, you don't pay taxes on that. You need every dollar of that to meet your needs.
Okay.
Let's say that. But I don't like the idea that, so you and me, we all of us are earned income workers. We have a lot of earned income, and unfortunately, in our society, that is the least favorable income taxably that there is. You can't, earned income
except
is
for estate
punished.
Tax. An estate tax is 40%.
Well, Sounds like I need to talk to a good estate planning attorney. You know anybody?
No, I'm just throwing that out there. But it's true. So every day we see that the more income that we earn, the more taxes that we pay. And it's not just because if I earn $100,000, then I'm paying, say I was in the 10% bracket, $10,000. And if I earn $200,000, I'm now paying $20,000, because it's not that simple. That would be the flat tax. Mm-hmm. Now I am earning more. I'm providing more services or more products or more widgets out to the society that people are voluntarily buying. So I'm actually doing more in society, but they're charging me based on how much I do. And even if it's a flat tax, I'm still paying twice as much for twice as much production. Now, it's unfortunately, in my view, not even that fair. It's progressively unfair in that if I now make $200,000 instead of paying $20,000, I go up to the next tax bracket, I'm going to pay $30,000. So I'm going to pay 10% on the first $100,000, 20% on the second $100,000. Again, it's not that easy. Mm-hmm. But for every additional $100,000 I make, I'm going to make an additional, or I'm going to climb into a different tax bracket, and they're going to punish me mm-hmm. for either my genius or my productivity or ingenuity or work ethic or whatever it is that generated that extra income. And so you think that's okay, that a flat tax is not the way to go, that a progressive tax, which we have now, is an option that you would consider still a better alternative?
I like the idea that a flat tax doesn't punish you as you increase on the ladder. As if, like you said, with the marginal tax brackets that we have, the more money you earn, the more taxes you pay, but the more proportional you pay too. And that seems unfair. It de-incentivizes work. It mm-hmm. de-incentivizes productivity in the marketplace. So you reach a certain point and you go, I'm comfortable now. If I worked a little harder and earned a little more, I'm going to be giving half of that away.
We've actually had that conversation. Yeah. I bet you have too.
Oh, yeah.
Probably with your partner, right?
Yeah. So you
look for ways to just spend money, because it's like, if we hit a little bit more, then we get hammered. What's the point? Why am I even coming to work?
Or you stop innovating and looking to open new businesses. And it's unfortunate, because people that have made it in business like you, we need to be the go-getters to go out there and continue to create opportunities, because you employ how many people?
We have, I think, 12 employees here.
And potentially, you could open up another practice. You could bring in another endodontist or another dentist, and you could create more work for other individuals. You could provide services if there's more people providing those services. Generally, the cost of the services go down, and because supply-demand effect goes into play, but you don't do that because you could work a whole bunch more, but you'd only be making 50 cents on the dollar because of your tax bracket. And so that totally disincentivizes you to help everybody else out there create those more jobs, drive down the prices, because the tax system has penalized you for your success.
Exactly. And, you know, people say, oh, the wealthy need to pay their fair share. The wealthy don't pay the same percentage of tax as earned income earners or earned income taxpayers, because earned income is taxed at a different level than capital gains. And so if you have money, then you can pay a smaller percentage, which I'm not knocking. I don't think the government should just be consistently taking the money that we have earned that is continuing to earn money. So I don't know what the solution is, but I can tell you it hurts writing big checks on money that I've worked really hard for, and I earn more money, but you reach a certain point where you're like, I don't want to work really hard so that I can write a bigger check to the IRS. And that makes me sad that I have those thoughts, that those thoughts even enter my mind. Is it worth it to work harder?
Okay, I have an easy question for you. We'll get away from politics, because I can see you're all squeamish about it.
Yeah, you're making me
nervous.
At the dinner table, you're not nearly this squeamish. Well, I can put a mic on you there.
Well, Where's the dinner table?
I told you we needed to start offering food.
Don't even give me a meal.
I know. I told them we needed to start doing that.
I offered you water.
Disarm our guests.
You did.
So what number did you graduate from your high school?
High school, 7 or 8.
Wow, okay.
I think I know I was top 10, and the only reason I know that is because I had a friend who was really upset that she was 11.
How many kids in your graduating class?
400 or 500.
Okay, so you graduated in Tucson?
No, here in
Yuma.
Cibola, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then you went on to U of A. How did you do there?
I did really well, yeah. I mean, I did well. Again, the OCD tendencies have some good that comes out of them. There's an evil side to it too, but yeah.
Then you went to the Navy. No, you went to dental school.
Dental school.
And dental school, how'd you do there?
So it's an interesting question, but I was ranked second. And when I said that, I had a friend who looked at me and said, "Oh, I'm also ranked number 2. So I don't know what the answer is, but on the transcript, the only reason that becomes important is when you apply for residencies. They want to know. So I think what my school did is they just ranked GPAs, and everyone with a certain GPA, if there was only one person with a higher GPA than you, you're ranked second. Or if there could be 14 of us who are all ranked number 2.
Okay.
So I don't know how they figured that out. I frankly don't care. It used to matter a lot to me, and I've come to realize it doesn't matter at all.
So did you play sports in high school or growing up? What did you play?
So I played baseball and I played golf.
Oh, that's right. You're a really good golfer.
I was a decent golfer that I could play with anyone. I wasn't ever competitive at a state level or really good, but I could be on the course and not look like a fool.
Do you think that played into your success later on in life, playing sports, organized sports?
I think it did. I don't know that that's the only avenue to gain those skills, but I think I mean, I definitely learned a lot on the golf course. You're only competing against yourself. Every time you practice it, you're trying to just be better than you were last time.
What position were you in baseball?
I played pitcher and first base.
Nice. How'd that help? Did it help at all? Or looking back, you're like, it was fun to do, but didn't really learn any life skills.
No, I did actually. And I still remember, and I actually had a conversation with my coach who coached me, what was that, 30 years ago? And we were playing, rolling double plays, and he would hit us ground ball, and we turned two, and then he looked at us and just put his hand, I thought we did a fine job. But he looked at us, he just threw the bat down, and he's like, "Guys, what are we doing? What are we doing? Good habits. You have to develop good habits." He said, "Get your head in it," because he could tell we were going through the motions, but we weren't thinking about what we were doing, and we weren't getting better with the practice. We were just doing what he asked us to do.
All right, awesome. Thanks for coming on, Chase.
Hey, thanks for having me.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Are your affairs in order, or do you think your affairs are in order? I'm attorney Adam Hansen. Now is the time to stop procrastinating. In fact, we have a seminar coming up on December 6th at 2:30 in the afternoon at the Foothills Library. My partner, Sean Garner, and I will be sharing with you what you need to know to get your affairs in order, or what you need to know to update that planning. Time is of the essence. Stop procrastinating. We'll see you at the Foothills Library.
95.1 KTTI, 100.9 The River,
and 560 K Blue
wish you and yours the very best this holiday season. And so does this great local business, Nisham Cafe, with 2 locations where all you need is love and coffee.
The next disaster is coming. The time to get ready is now. Make a plan. Identify meetup locations and people you'll need to contact, and keep your contact list somewhere safe. Build a kit with enough food and water for 3 days. And don't forget your pets. Keep 7 days of medication on hand. Work with your pharmacist and insurance company to get the extra doses. Make copies of important documents and keep them on your phone, in the cloud, or on a USB stick. Stay informed. Note area hazards. Take courses in CPR and first aid. And sign up for local alerts. Be ready. Learn more at americares.org/sendusin.
In tough times, it can be difficult to know where to turn. If you or someone you know is looking for help, the Yuma Community Food Bank is here if you need a hand. We provide food and other resources to families, seniors, and individuals in need. We are open Monday through Friday. All you need to receive a food box is a photo ID with your current address. Visit our website at yumafoodbank.org for more information. The Yuma Community Food Bank also accepts donations in the form of non-perishable food, monetary donations, and volunteer help. You can choose to donate or advocate. You can choose to volunteer or raise awareness. You can choose to help end hunger. Call us anytime, 928-343-1243. Visit our main campus, located at 2404 East 24th Street, or use our food locator map online at yumafoodbank.org.
What is your healing power? Maybe your healing power is helping veterans with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries, depression, anxiety, or loneliness. Is your healing power a simple, heartfelt letter or being a volunteer? It is estimated that over 500,000 current warfighters will return from service diagnosed with PTSD, and 22 veterans will commit suicide every day. Our veterans have paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country. At HealVets.org, you can find out more about the healing power of pen pals, volunteers, therapy kits, and more. Discover your healing power at HealVets.org. Help Heal Veterans, together with you, has been helping one recovering veteran at a time. We are helping veterans heal together. What is your healing power? To find out about your power, visit HealVets.org. This PSA is sponsored by Help Heal Veterans.
Hi, this is Tony Driscoll, Vice President, General Manager of Eldorado Broadcasters. If you're the owner and or operator of a local business, I'd like you to hire us. Yes, I'd like you to add 560 KBLU to your team. For what it costs you for hourly employees, like that guy that at this very moment is leaning back in his chair, staring aimlessly, or the gal checking her Facebook page for the 17th time today, you could be reaching out to thousands of listeners with a positive message about your business. Sorry, guys, I didn't mean to bust you out like that, but hey, get back to work. If you want to reach the people listening to the radio right now, just like you are, give me a call at 928-344-4980. And if I'm not leaning back in my chair, staring aimlessly, or checking my Facebook page, I'll answer your call and we can talk about us going to work for you. 344-4980.
Eldorado Broadcasters is an equal opportunity employer.
This is 560 KBLU.
Hey guys, Dave Ramsey here. Join me and the Ramsey personalities as we give you the tools and motivation you need to win in the areas of money, career, and more right here on The Ramsey Show.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknights at 7 on 560 KBLU.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Williams, and I want to share with you the role that diabetes has had in my family. I lost my grandmother at the early age of 64 due to complications with diabetes. She was warm, generous, and a constant encouragement for me to follow my heart. Did you know that African Americans experience chronic kidney disease at a rate that's 25% higher than white Americans? And we're almost four times more likely to develop kidney failure. Diabetes and high blood pressure are leading causes of kidney disease, which can result in kidney failure, needing dialysis or a kidney transplant. The good news is that you have the power to check out how well your kidneys are doing and learn ways to prevent them from failing. So go to your doctor and get yourself checked out. Visit linkbylovetv.org to learn more. Get the facts, get checked, and get healthy.
Ready? Go!
Okay, doctor.
Operation.
No,
Hurry, time's almost up.
Okay. The most amazing care. Oh, Belly!
Well, I know! Shriner!
Time's up! Okay, our turn.
Ready? Go!
They changed my life.
Shriner's Hospital for Children! Yay!
because people just like you, kids like me, can play in the game of life.
I can do things now that were impossible before.
I can draw.
I can play basketball.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Thank you!
Go to loveshriners.org right away. Thank you!
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.